The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The Cattell Center for Equity, Health, and Justice is celebrating its fifth anniversary. As they say on the website, Cattell works to strengthen the people, policies, institutions, and movements that advance equity, health, and justice for everyone. They've begun hosting a series of public dialogues about the broad themes that drive their work, equity, health, and justice. The first of those dialogues was held March 29th. We're going to hear a small portion of that now. First, here's Cattell Center's Director of Organizing, Kenyatta Thompson.
So again, this is our fifth year. Cattell, we are a young organization, but young and mighty. And so what a long 5 years it's been. So you're going to hear not just from myself and Lorenzo, our wonderful moderator for the event and our wonderful co-founder and co-executive director of Cattell, but you're going to hear from a number of luminaries in the field about the work that they have been doing as it relates to equity, health, and justice. And so tonight we are going to have a great discussion about where our field has been and where we're going. And even more, we'll talk about the history of Cattell and where we have been in the last 5 years and where we are going as an organization. So we can't gather in person because of the pandemic, but we're gathering here virtually so that we can be in community with each other. So again, I see a bunch of folks in here that have made an impact on Cattell over the last 5 years. Hey, Della, I see you over there as well. What's going on, Paul? And you typed in the chat, man, see, me and you were on this like wavelength, Paul, I gotta say. So anyway, we're being in here, y'all gonna get me started with just who's in the chat here. We're gathering on this virtual platform so that we can be in community together. It's what we do as Cattell. We use organizing as our primary methodology. And so gathering in these spaces are really important to us. So even though we can't be together physically, we're going to be together socially. So this is going to be a great night. So again, grab your drinks that you have. Again, water, I've got water. Grab, you know, whatever you need to get through the night. And we want to thank our wonderful sponsors for the event, which include the Ford Foundation, the Andres Family Fund, One Standard of Justice, Hey Cindy, and the plethora of anonymous donors for tonight. And so again, this is the first in of our many dialogue series for Cattell at Five. So if you're interested in sponsoring any of our upcoming dialogues, feel free to reach out to us via email and we can make sure that we get you on a list of being one of our sponsors. So tonight we're gonna have fun. We're here to laugh, and y'all know we're gonna laugh, especially if Lorenzo is moderating this panel. So y'all be prepared to laugh and have fun. We're going to show out for each other because that's what we do as community. So I love that the chat is already live. I didn't even get to like asking folks if they can start putting stuff in the chat. So I'm getting there in a second. And important, as we always do at Cattell, we're going to talk about some serious things that are impacting all of us and our lives. So this is going to be a night where we get to be our full selves and do what we do at Cattell. And we're grateful that all of you can share in that with us. What's going on, Andre? So the first thing that we want you to do is, if you can, and you are open to it, change your name. So if you hit the top three dots in the upper right-hand corner of your screen, you can change your name and put, you know, whether you want to put the organization you're with, or even if you are a member, if you are an intern, even if you are a former intern, just drop that. This way we can know who you are and others can know who you are. And you could even put your location if you wanted to drop like your location or even drop who you are in the chat. That would be great as well. This way others can see who you are. So feel free to both change your name and drop that stuff in the chat and keep the chat live, because this is how we are in community with each other. If we were in person, we'd be, you know, whispering to the person who's at our table. So the closest thing we can do to that is like make sure we're in the chat. So DM somebody if somebody says something or you realize, oh my gosh, like you are a former intern, I'm interested in being an intern. Hit somebody up, or if somebody says something in the chat that resonates with you, make sure you connect with them. So I've personally had the pleasure of being at Cattell for nearly the last 3 years in our entire 5 year time span. And hey, Mama Roz, you already know I'm a Brooklyn girl, so Brooklyn all day, every day. But I'll get back to Gonzalo in a second. So over the last 5 years, we have done a lot. And we can talk for hours about just the work that we have done. But I wanted to just start and do a brief history of where we've been at Catal and then talk about where we're going. So when I came to Catal in 2018, I started as a community organizing fellow. And we were heavily engaged at the time, or at least partially engaged with the Close Rikers campaign. And so that is one of the founding campaigns at Catal, where we co-founded that. We co-founded that campaign, and that has been one of the things that people really know a lot about Catal. We were able to successfully get the mayor to say that he would actually close Rikers Island, which is an amazing, amazing accomplishment. Throughout that time as well, we also were able to expand medication-assisted treatment and do a medication-assisted treatment program in Albany, the capital city of New York. And so a lot of folks also know us from the work that we've done, heavily engaged in ensuring that medication-assisted treatment is available in Albany. We were also heavily engaged in bail and speedy trial reform. So many folks may have come into contact with Catal through some of the work that we were doing on bail and speedy trial, which helped to radically transform how people are able to both get out of the criminal justice system and make sure that we're not just, you know, keeping people in. So outside of some of the things that we've done, people also know us heavily for our statewide monthly criminal justice reform calls, both in New York and Connecticut. And so we hold these every single month, and we'll actually be holding the Connecticut one this week. And so it's a place where people can get together and share and learn the different statewide campaigns that are happening in both of the states that we operate in, New York and Connecticut. And so if you're not connected to any of those statewide calls, feel free to hit me up during this event and I will make sure we get you listed on there. Outside of that, something that we also heavily invest our time into is both our Building Leadership and Organizing Capacity program and the apprentice program that comes with that. And so if you are not familiar with our Building Leadership and Organizing Capacity program, it is also known as BLOC. We hold a monthly block roundtable, which is a space for organizers throughout the space, and especially youth organizers and youth leaders, to come together and learn the fundamentals of organizing. And so, again, as an organization, we're not only devoted to building us, but we're devoted to building the field. And our block program is our commitment to that, to ensuring that, especially youth organizers, they are able to get the tools and tactics that they need to succeed as organizers. And so that's been a lot of the work that we've done pre-pandemic. And so, you know, we listed Close Rikers, we talked about medication-assisted treatment, we talked about bail reform, we talked about the statewide calls, we talked about our block program. And then we were hit unexpectedly in 2020 with the global pandemic. And in spite of everything, we've continued to organize. Right now, we're heavily engaged in our parole reform campaign in New York called Less is More New York. And so we are in the process of really radically transforming the parole system in New York. And we're now closer than ever in actually getting Less is More New York passed. And so I just want to say a huge thanks to all the folks who are on the call right now who have helped to support the work that we're doing in New York. I saw your name come across in the chat. So continuing to like monitor that and just shout out to everybody who's in this event. And again, even throughout the pandemic, we've continued to organize in support of people who are currently incarcerated and have been marginalized and forgotten by the governors in both of our states. So we're heavily engaged in our Free Them Now CP campaign and our Free Them Now New York campaign, which seeks to ensure that Governors Lamont and Cuomo develop a comprehensive COVID-19 plan inside of correctional facilities in both the states we work in. And even most recently, we launched our Cut, Shut, Invest campaign in Connecticut, which is designed to cut the number of incarcerated people in our state prisons that also include people who are on community supervision, shut these old decrepit systems and shut these old decrepit facilities, and then actually invest in our communities. So we've done a lot over the last 5 years. That was a mouthful even for me, so I can't even imagine what that must be for y'all who are listening to me like rattle off on all of these things that we've done. I hear you laughing, Lorenzo. And that's I think that just shows the commitment that we have as an organization to legitimately ensuring that not only do we see these reforms through, but that we're also investing in our people so that these reforms can be long lasting. Again, we're organizers at the core of what we do. So everything we do is dependent on, are we developing the leadership of people and legitimately investing in our communities and making sure that they have the tools and tactics that they need to succeed. And so before I go into what you can expect for this evening and I go through the quick intros off script, I really want to just give a major shout out to both of our co-founders and co-executive directors for this night. Because of the work that the both of you have put in, we are here. And all of us on the call are able to continue to do what we do.
That was Kenyatta Thompson, Director of Organizing at the Catala Center for Equity, Health, and Justice. She was speaking at an online event marking the 5th anniversary of the Catala Center. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. That event was also the kickoff for the Catala Center's new series of dialogues on the broad themes that drive their work, equity, health, and justice. Now let's hear a few words from Lorenzo Jones. He's co-founder and co-executive director of the center.
Thank you all for joining, right? Because for Gabriel and I, I'm going to give you like a 3 minutes and we're going to get the speakers up here, right? Because We spent a lot of time, Mary Grace and I'm on here as well, right? I can't see everybody on my screen, right? But we got our board members on, Mama Roz is on, Marie France is on, former staff person, now board member. Chietz is on, founding board member with the newest addition to the Catala family, the baby that she didn't call nobody and say she had. But then I want to shout out some of the other people like in the Catala orbit. They may not be as obvious, right? Like Sherelle been ever, right? Miss Dell is on here. Josh Blanchfield and them go way. They go way back. You understand? Like Harvard Undercurrent, way back. Like Graves Play, way back. Street Theater. They were the ones doing Street Theater at Heartbeat Ensemble in Connecticut when we was trying to get Cracker Pot of Cocaine passed. Rest in peace to my man. You know what I'm saying? Right. He also out of Chicago. So for people, and those are just my relationships. Gabriel's got a whole series of relationships that go back decades on this call. And people, one of the things that happened with Gabriel and I, and I want to bring somebody into the room because we don't talk about her, but it's like textbook, the like problem, right? Is Melody Lee, who is our third co-founder of Catala. Stop playing. Anybody who know Melody Lee, like Melody Lee is a beast. She's a beast. Like it's a term people apply to Kenyatta. You probably hear people say Kenyatta is a beast. Kenyatta's a beast. Our third co-founder is not only a woman of color, but an Asian woman. And I'm saying to you, this young lady might weigh 75 pounds wet. One of the toughest, clearest, right, trustworthy people, right, that I've worked with. And we don't get to talk about her a lot because she transitioned out of Catala and she went on and she's doing great things other places. But I got to bring her in the room because we're not going to invisibilize women of color work, period, right? But that's our third co-founder. And so we launched Catala, right, as a way of operationalizing work that Gabriel and I, and eventually Melody, but Cassandra's in this mix, right? Like this stuff just keeps like turning over on itself when you do it right. But we launched Catala as a way to try to operationalize our theory of change, which is something that's different than what most people are used to. So like you heard Kenyatta, we're organizers, sawdust on the floor, kicking organizers, right? We don't make no apologies for it. But we also understand that like inside our organizing cannot be bereft of like policy work and communications and like just power analysis and politics, small politics, big P politics and small P politics, right? Movement building, capacity, leadership, and organizing support for people, prioritizing women of color, especially Black women's leadership. Like we were doing that before George Floyd, Like, anybody in Connecticut will tell you Lorenzo been rocking for black and brown women, like, from whatever day one. They on here. If I'm lying, they'll call me out, right? And so what we try to do with Catal was this thing, like, we were not going to create another community base. We were not going to create a policy shop. We weren't going to create another white-led organization, because Gabriel's, like, this handsome, like, Tom Cruise-esque, like person, right? We weren't going to play, like, oh, I remember when we talked about it, Gabriel said, I said, I don't got a problem working for you. Like, me and Gabriel, like, we tight. This is, like, maybe 7 years ago. He was like, you got to be out your damn mind. It's like, that's not going to happen. Like, we're going to be equal, right? And so there's an analysis around race, an analysis around gender, an analysis around lifestyle and, like, diets and religion, right? So it's like, one of the things we tried to do with Catal was to operationalize this idea that you could build power with interracial, intergenerational, and intergender groups, right? And that, like, that was actually the only real way to build power, right? Because anything else would limit the number of people you could organize. And in order to hold something accountable, you got to organize a base as big as the base you're trying to hold accountable. So you're trying to hold the governor accountable, you got to organize the electorate, the entire state electorate, and then some, right? So the idea was that if we can we put together an organization that will help us accomplish that, and but have it working in multiple states. And it took us some time to kind of like trim down our own profiles to be able to focus on just New York and Connecticut. But you heard Kenyatta kind of walk through like the top surface area of like our run of like show over the last 5 years. Like, we're training youth organizers, right, with support from Parent Foundation and Pinkerton. Like, we're training, like, dozens. Like, I'm talking about, like, 12 to 15 youth organizers in Connecticut right now, right? Like, we've been meeting with, like, at least a solid 15 to 18 organizers at our organizer roundtable in New York, right? The work that folks are doing around the Less is More stuff in the working committees. Like, so it's just kind of like, for Gabriel and I, like, where we are today, where outside of not having Melody, is exactly where we thought we were supposed to be.
That was Lorenzo Jones. He's co-founder and co-director of the Catal Center for Equity, Health, and Justice. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The new executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance, Cassandra Frederick, was one of the participants in that dialogue. Let's hear from her now.
I don't know if I can still say young, but I am a Black woman from New York City. And I like to think about to the Haitians on here, I'm going to do it. Okay. I am a Black person who grew up in New York City under Mayor Giuliani. And that really shapes how I've seen myself and also how I see the world. And I say that because growing up under Giuliani, New York City, meant that the image of Blackness and criminality was always at the forefront. And that the propaganda and what I believed about my community was shaped by Giuliani and was developed in spite of Giuliani. And I grew up in a immigrant household, first generation, with two parents that came from a political dictatorship in the island of Haiti, and coming to the U.S., not speaking English, and learning to survive, and then also navigating the very real impact of the criminalization of health, because when you're growing up in the 90s with HIV/AIDS and people using Haitians as saying that they were the carriers of that, my first instances of public unrest in the United States is the conversations of my parents and family members when they walk the Brooklyn Bridge. And so before I even understood that organizing was a thing, organizing was in my home because we were always listening to the political unrest in Haiti and the organizing, the way that criminalization was playing out when it came to health. And then also understanding that I knew the names of people I knew the names of people who were killed by NYPD before I knew my states of the United States, right? So like in second grade, I could name that Anthony Baez was killed through a chokehold. And in fourth, fifth grade is when I learned the states of the United States, right? And in fifth grade was when we had a DARE officer come in and try to teach us about drugs. And that was at the same time that Abner Louima had been sodomized by NYPD. And our class had our newspaper, and my classmate, Joshua Woods, pulls up the paper and starts banging on the table, no justice, no peace, where our Black principal had to come in and escort the Latino police officer out of the classroom, right? And so when I think about all those things, I learned so much about what was possible and what was real, living in a time where white people in New York City were thinking the city was being cleaned up after Dinkins, and Black people were being told that we were criminals and that the hope of Black leadership was a fallacy, right? And so I operate understanding those two things with a deep commitment to Black leadership and Black organizing, with a deep commitment to understanding that abolition is possible, but also because I'm Haitian, the ancestral lessons that if we take things down, we have to build something in its place, because if we do not, then we will only manifest what we know. And so that has really shaped a lot of what I've thought. And I really am grateful to be here because, coming through like organizing through like union shops and doing summer internships at unions, the person that really put that into articulation and weaponized it and really got me to be super sharp was Gabriel, who was my first boss. And so if I think about like the way that I think about things and the way that I've been able to build my tools, I think there's something really important, which gives me the opportunity and the ability to understand that while I am a Black person that believes deeply in Black leadership and Black movement, that there is value in multiracial organizing, and there's an ability to deepen relationship with people across race because of the ways that I've been brought into the world with a white man, Giuliani, trying to shape what I thought was possible, and another white man helping me like really sharpen the tools that we're in front of. That's what I think.
That was Cassandra Frederick, the executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance. She was participating in a dialogue organized by the Catal Center for Equity, Health, and Justice. The Catal Center is a tremendous organization. Find out more about Catal Center and how you can support their work by going to their website, www.catalcenter.org. And now, speaking of the Drug Policy Alliance, they recently announced that their International Reform Conference, which would ordinarily be held later this year, is in fact being postponed. They'll make more information available later on in the year, but for now, the Drug Policy Alliance's International Reform Conference will be postponed. You can find out more by going to their website at drugpolicy.org. The European Monitoring Center on Drugs and Drug Addiction has been holding a series of webinars around the theme of COVID. On March 25th, they held a discussion entitled COVID-19 and Drugs in the European Neighborhood: Lessons Learned from Ukraine and Georgia. This is Dr. Tetiana Karyazova. She's Senior Research Scientist at the Ukrainian Institute of Public Health Policy.
Regarding access to harm reduction services, both key informants and participants, the drug users, admitted that in the initial phases of the lockdown, access was reduced, but the programs managed to adapt quickly and reacted flexibly to the situation and resume service provision, mostly increasingly using new modalities like mobile vans, going through the cities in all city districts and more widely using outreach services, and also providing sanitizers and face masks, which was very appreciated, especially in the beginning of the pandemic. Thank you. And access to opioid agonist treatment was described as almost stopped in the beginning of the pandemic. Admission of new patients, actually, it was not only reduced, but in Kyiv City, it was completely unavailable. And you can see on the figure to the left that the that more than three quarters of our participants actually did not receive treatment for substance use at all. But for those who were receiving OAT services, only several people dropped out. And in the beginning, as I said, the admissions was unavailable, and those people actually who wanted to start OAT treatment in the beginning of the pandemic, they switched to these private physicians to buy prescriptions and to buy medical methadone. But the public health center reacted quickly and issued guidance to allow take-home doses for OAT patients in March. And as while before the pandemic, about 60% of OAT patients in Kyiv were receiving take-home doses of methadone and buprenorphine during the lockdown, the strict lockdown for 2.5 months, the almost 100% receiving take-home doses, and about 80% actually stayed on these doses after the lockdown was finished. And to summarize our results, we can say that many people who use drugs experienced reduced access to their drug of choice during the initial stage of lockdown, especially, but for the most, they reported that it was restored after the transportation reopened. And we saw a significant decrease in use of illicit methadone because of access difficulties when the transportation was closed and public gatherings restrictions were in place, and many people who previously used illicit methadone switched to medical methadone obtained by prescription from private physicians and bought from many of them were buying the methadone from the pharmacies for themselves, and many bought the pills like resold by their peers or dealers. And this situation did not return to the previous levels, even after the strict lockdown finished, indicating a sustained change in the drug scene in Ukraine. At least this is what we saw during the 6 months of the beginning of the pandemic. And harm reduction and OAT programs managed to adapt to the rapidly changing situation quickly. And after the less availability in the beginning of the pandemic, they resumed service provision without major interruption. And these are the main lessons learned from our study.
That was Dr. Tatiana Karyosova. She's senior research scientist at the Ukrainian Institute of Public Health Policy. She was speaking on a webinar hosted by the European Monitoring Center on Drugs and Drug Addiction entitled COVID-19 and Drugs in the European Neighborhood, Lessons Learned from Ukraine and Georgia.
Thank you. Make some noise if you like weed. Who here likes weed? How about if you like marijuana? What about marijuana? How about that? Who likes grass? How about that? Make some noise. How many people like to smoke pot? What about pot? How about reefer? Who feels good about it? I can keep going. I'm going to try to make sense right now.
And that's it for this week. Thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Century of Lies. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy reform and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.